Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the 615 Sessions podcast here at the Titans practice facility. We're happy to have you in for another episode of the show. This is not just a 615 Sessions podcast. However, it is a joint pod and with a third wheel type of situation that we've got here.
Where's the joint?
Paul Kaharsky of PaulKaharsky.com. It's a joint 615 Sessions and PK Pod. What's happening?
How we doing?
We're great. We just concluded the draft. Morale is high. You can tell by Joe's shitty body language. We have been in a room.
Joe's exhausted. He's been talking nonstop the whole day.
He's been encouraging conversation nonstop throughout the course of the day, which we have had plenty of because it's a unique draft class. Rand Carthon's second, Ryan Callahan's first, and we're here to break it down with you guys. You can share this broadcast around on Paul's YouTube channel, on our YouTube channel. Make sure you like the video while you're there. You can retweet it on Twitter if you're so inclined, and if you're on Facebook Live, you can share not a public.
I don't see it on my channel yet, so you got to be screwing me.
Well, hold on. What about me? Do I get a piece of this?
You don't know.
I'm on the dark web. I'll DM details. I'm so slap happy right now.
He can't even figure out how this is going to be a total shit show.
He needs to go in the other room and talk with Teresa about Olympic appetizers.
I need you to go outside so I can take more artistic photos of you.
Well, ironically enough, we have not done a podcast together in the same room since we were all drinking beers together at the Combine thinking Tom Brady was going to be the next Titans quarterback. So we'll see.
That was a long time.
It's been quite a while. So anyway, boys.
Paul was still old and bald then.
Well, neither of you have aged gracefully at this point, which is why it's on me to carry this podcast. We have the picks in place. We have five picks on defense. We have two on offense. I guess we start at the top with J.C. Latham, PK. They take the tackle over a crowded wide receiver class. They take the tackle after Joe Alton, Malik Nabers, goes off the board. And they take a right tackle to play left, and they're pretty confident that he can do it.
I'm fine with taking the tackle as long as he can play left. If he can't play left, I've got a big problem. But I have no reason to believe he can't play left. Bill Callahan's a great coach. He flipped Tyron Smith. He flipped Jedrick
Wills.
And he should be able to flip Latham. I just prefer the idea of coming out of a draft where you only have two picks in the top 106 and not having a question about either of them. And they have a question, not to jump ahead the second round, but they come out with a question. Can this guy, in fact, play left tackle? We have to wait and see, even though confidence is high. And can Devondre Sweat keep his weight down? Have to wait and see. And that's going to be a question for his whole career. I'd rather you have two picks unquestioned. Unquestioned, knowing that they're going to be rocks for you and there's nothing you have to wait on or worry about during their career. The Latham thing should be answered relatively quickly. The Sweat thing, I think, is probably a question for the bulk of his career. Bulk. See what I did there?
There's a lot of bulk going around, about 708 pounds of lineman in the first 2 days. Joe, do you have the same kind of quibble?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. There are questions and you don't like to have too many draft picks where you have to explain something. And there has been this year and in previous years with the Titans. Now that's previous regimes, but I'm just saying, if you're a Titans fan, you've kind of seen a lot of that. Here's my question for you guys on Latham, because I hear what you're saying, PK, but let me ask you both this. If J.C. Latham, it doesn't work, obviously they're going to give him full opportunity on the left side. It doesn't work out because you're right. Obviously you have some examples of guys switching, but there are certainly failed examples too. And there are some people who think it's more difficult than other people think it is.
Right.
So let's say it doesn't work out. It's just not natural for him. It's like, all right, put him back on right tackle. He's fantastic. He's a great player there. Is it, you have a problem with the pick still?
Yes.
Okay.
Because they pick right tackles like they're going out of style in this organization. Left tackle still, I understand right tackle's gotten more important, but left tackle hasn't gotten less important. It's Will Levis's blind side. He's more likely to get hit by a thing there. And they have people who can play right tackle on the roster. They don't have anybody that can play left tackle on the roster.
That's the
thing. They need to solve the damn position on the left side.
That's the thing.
So finding a great right tackle doesn't solve their biggest problem.
And as casually as they treated it, I feel like that kind of got, you know, not rankled us necessarily, but rankled the fan base when you hear Brian Callahan say, well, if he doesn't work out on the left, we'll just move him to right. Because, again, that does not solve the solution as PK is articulating about the left tackle. Because I don't know, Joe, like, the explanation that was given to me, I'm sure you guys talked to people throughout the course of the week inside the building and inside the draft room, that they needed one tackle, right or left, one way or the other. So if he doesn't work out there, they just move him over. And then what is the question?
Right, but see, the thing is, you just said they have someone who can play right tackle and not left tackle. As far as I know, Nicholas Petitfrere might be able to play either or neither. Right? Like, to me, it's like
they've got a whole bunch of options and a coach who should be able to coach one of them into it. Who are the options on the left? Nobody.
I think it's probably going to be Petitfrere, right? Wouldn't that be the most logical move to just flip-flop that?
Or they could do the unthinkable, which is play Dylan Radins at the position that he played his entire college career, which nobody seems willing to try.
They don't even think of him as a tackle. They think of him as a guard. And that's Bill Callahan thinking that he's a guard.
See, the thing is,
the solution is Andrus Peat, who played pretty good left tackle yesterday, but has played his whole career as a left guard before that. I want a left tackle, a guy who is unquestionably a left tackle.
I agree. And if it doesn't, I agree. But I still say if he's great. I mean, look, the Detroit Lions, the beloved Detroit Lions, they have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. Their best player in their entire team is their right tackle. They have an okay left tackle. They're fine. Who's the Philadelphia Eagles' best offensive line? I think that in this league now, if you are great at a tackle spot and you can be okay at the other, the question this year would be, okay, then, or can you even be okay? So this year, it'd be a whole bunch of consternation, complaining, and I would understand it. It might be a real problem. Long term, I still think the pick could be validated if he is great at one of them.
And he's athletically great enough, and they seem to have zero hesitations. And if Bill Callahan doesn't have a hesitation, PK, I think that's the thing that quells most of that, even though they're fair questions to have at this point. It's a completely fair question, a completely fair argument, because I'm sure fans of this organization are tired of seeing offensive line who've played one position their entire careers get drafted by this organization and they get moved completely to a different position and have to relearn the position.
It just delays the satisfaction of the comfort level. I saw Bill Belichick say he's got no question that Latham can play on the left. So that also comforts me. But it's delayed gratification. And I understand people wanting, with the seventh pick in the draft, which is very high, a conclusive solution to one of the team's problems. And we don't have it yet. I'm confident that he's going to be a left tackle. But they're not going to declare that until, you know, midway through camp or something like that. And that's a wait.
Can I get a quick one in here?
Yes, you may.
For both of you, if you were in charge at that moment at number 7.
How do you always end up hosting my podcast? And by the way, this is
because he doesn't have his own.
This is the joint 615 Sessions.
I don't know if it's joint because I'm not seeing it on my YouTube.
I'm seeing it streaming right there. You see a little megaphone symbol? That means it's streaming to your YouTube channel.
It's streaming to my private YouTube channel.
Oh, no. We put it on the wrong YouTube channel. PK got to figure it out. Either way, his podcast is presented by Zen Sports. Promo code?
TN Paul. TNPAUL. And if you use that and bet at least $10, you get a free year membership to PaulKowarski.com. What can Buck offer?
Just the promo code ATOZTN and the joy of these two gentlemen on the podcast.
Better offer here.
Better offer here. ATOZTN.
TNPAUL.
Guy doesn't even know his promo code. Hanging out here with us.
I was going to switch account
at the facility. So we'll keep it moving.
Hold on, I need to ask this question.
Ask your question.
All right, real quick. You guys are in charge. 7. You're taking who? And you're sticking at 7. And you're not. Whatever. You take Latham or.
Well, as it was, I want to trade back.
I know, but if you have to stick at 7, you're taking who? Right there.
I'm taking Latham because Alton Neighbors are off the board. I would have wanted Neighbors. The New York Giants get the smokescreen award for the first round. There was a lot of gaslighting about Daniel Jones and his situation, the idea of potentially taking J.J. McCarthy, having to maneuver. I thought once the Arizona Cardinals stuck and picked at 4, and we'll talk about the idea of trades and the lack of trades in this particular organization's draft here in just a second relative to a place like Arizona or Philadelphia. I would have gone Latham because he's violent, he's physical, he's an athlete, and I think that if Bill Callahan thinks he's capable of playing left tackle, it's fine.
I might have taken a Dunze.
Yeah,
but
a Dunze.
If you go and look then at what was available at 38, you wouldn't have done very well in terms of offensive line, and so it would have conceivably been a disaster. Patrick Paul was there; he went at 55, so I would have wound up with Rome and Patrick Paul.
Would you be satisfied with that?
Yeah, I'd feel pretty good about that.
I'd feel pretty good about that too.
I mean, it's one of those things where, again, at seven, the idea of trading back seemed viable to everybody but the GM, and we'll talk about that in particular because, Paul, I know you were documenting very closely throughout the course of the last 3 days here at the facility. Well, we've all been locked in the same room together. The amount of trades or lack thereof that the Titans have been able to execute, even though they had plenty of action on at least their first two picks.
I don't think there was a trade to be made at seven. Like, if you look at what unfolded behind them, none of those teams needed to trade up to get what they got after them. So I think the Titans were stuck at seven, which happens. At 38, no matter how married you are to sweat there, I think you probably had a chance to trade back. There were seven trades there. The furthest anybody dropped back was 13, but there were trades that dropped back one. There were trades that dropped back three. There were trades that dropped back four. I think they probably had opportunity. Certainly, you take a risk of losing your guy, but you need to have three guys that you like and take those trade backs in order to get yourself additional capital. And they really needed additional capital. And only time will tell if Sweat was worth, you know, saying we've got to stay at 38.
It's just a tough parallel, Joe, especially when Monty Ossenfort, who interviewed for this job, took the Arizona Cardinals job, had not. And I know Monty equipped himself well for this upcoming draft last year. So this was a slow build for him, but he had 9 picks in the top 100, and this team had two.
In the top 106.
Two.
Top 105.
Yeah, and valid points. Yeah, obviously, it's always tough with this, not knowing exactly what's being discussed. But, you know, I would love to know other teams' view of Sweat and how far back you could have gone and still gotten. I mean, Sweat was all over the board. Certainly analysts. I mean, I know my coworker Dan Brugler had him as like a fourth rounder. I mean, a lot of people had him 100+, into the 140s.
The idea that he's the first player in the history of the Senior Bowl to not want to weigh in is concerning. and the idea that they think of him here as a three-down player potentially is very much dependent on their ability to get that in check with the new strength and conditioning
staff. And I respect Brian Callahan came right out. You know, I asked a body fat question because I heard two very high, very, very high body fat numbers. I couldn't get it resolved.
He carries it a lot differently than J.C. Latham.
Yes. But he came right out and said, you know, it's been made clear to him, you know, the price of being overweight based on what we set for him, like the financial price that these fines are going to sting him if he's overweight. He's a big man with big man problems who needs to, you know, have big man solutions and all of that. So I understand that and everything. That's fine. I do think, you know, Rand kind of is bragging about the number of offers that he turned down. And I think this was a situation where Callahan saved him a little bit, the same way Vrabel saved him a little bit last year when he was saying, don't go after Tajay Sharp about the no ACL. This is the biggest night of his life. And Vrabel was like, this is the biggest night of his life. We drafted the wrong guy.
Yeah.
Callahan
that
said,
was saving him. Well, it almost felt like taking a veiled shot at him. But,
well, you know. You know what I mean? We're saving the organization.
And it's not like we didn't crush Rand for that particular
time. Saving the organization in terms of not being that soft organizationally. And Callahan here, I think, tried to save Rand by saying, you know, all of these offers, some of them were taking us out of the range of dipping us too far out of the range of the caliber of player we wanted to get at that stage. But again, if you look at the seven trades that did take place, I'm sure some of those teams were calling the Titans as well, and a lot of them were very reasonable trades.
Well, and understandably, because you put that out there with no context, the idea that they got seven or eight or nine offers. Like,
and
he said
that before.
He said
the phone was continuing to ring during.
And that they decided to pick Sweat anyway, with the kind of controversy about the analysis or about the player in particular. I think the fan base kind of reacted poorly, and then Callahan came in and cleaned it up a little bit about the value of the offers that may or may not have been present. But just from a football standpoint, he's here, Tavondre Sweat. It's beef in the first two rounds for the Titans, and they did address linebacker in a couple of different ways, which we'll get to today. specifically, but the idea that whomever is playing linebacker, whoever starting as off-ball linebacker for the Titans is going to be able to play behind Jeff and Tavondre Sweat is going to allow them for to have a lot cleaner looks, keep some big bodies off them.
I mean, I love Tavondre Sweat. Watching him play at Texas, he's an incredible player. I mean, you know, he won the Outland Trophy. That typically, you know, there's some correlation there with success in the NFL. I got to say, though, and I understand the Titans, you know, they did extra stuff. They flew down another day after his visit and all that after the DWI arrest. I just, you know, young people make mistakes. Jeffrey Simmons came in, and that was all the talk when he got drafted, right? But that was a mistake he made in high school. To make that mistake during this process when you are in the most critical point of your life, and it is, I mean, you are in a job interview for your life for an opportunity that 0.0001% of humans will ever have. And to make that mistake then does concern me.
This month.
Yeah.
This month. That happened this month.
Right
on the decision-making front, that's concerning. I also, on the flip side of that, I do think that if you're going to bring that guy into a place, I mean, Jeffrey Simmons to me is now the primary leader on this football team. Derrick Henry's gone. Kevin Byard's gone. Jeffrey Simmons is, I think Will Levis needs to grow into that, right, on the offensive side of the ball. But and I think Tajay Spears and another guy. But Jeffrey Simmons is the primary leader of this football team. So you have the model pro intense player who gets the most out of himself on this roster who is with you in your position group. So I think from that standpoint, it's a very good situation for him, but that is concerning.
And they've hedged their bets a little bit, PK, with Coburn, his former Texas teammate who he knows very well, and tried to create a situation, it seems like, that would foster that kind of growth and maturity, or at least buffer it.
Yeah, that helps. I would like to see, though, look, if you're fine with him after the DUI and you visited his hometown and all of that, then you say, hey, we got a value here. Like you're talking about, Joe, some people had him in the fourth round.
Yeah.
Well, if he slips in the eyes of others because of that, you feel great about
it.
Hey, we're getting
capital.
A steal here. Right. But when you're still drafting him like at the highest end that anybody's got him forecast, you're not getting any benefit out of the DUI. That came out wrong, but you know what I'm saying there. Like you should get added value out of the fact that you think you've got a really accurate assessment of the person despite his recent failure. And they didn't get anything extra out of it. They still spent the same high value. I also, Jeff Simmons may be the top leader on this team, but he's nowhere near as good a leader as some of you guys give credit for.
So you disagree with what I said?
No, not that. I don't disagree with that at all. I just think what, at least, PK, the way that I take that is having covered previous locker rooms, as we all have, this just, it feels like a different dynamic. Not that everybody can't lead in their own particular way. And we'll see how and when Jeff establishes himself more, because he certainly tried to lean in to that role. But it's not Delanie Walker to me. It's not Wesley Woodyard to me. It's not Jarrell Casey to me. It may become that because this just, it feels different, the dynamic. And, you know, perhaps Jeff Simmons is capable of leading in a similar style, but it doesn't feel like he's got that kind of command.
Is he going to teach Sweat to be sour when he's asked about the DUI? Is he going to teach Sweat to be sour anytime anybody questions anything that he's done? Because that's how Jeff Simmons leads, is to be disgusted anytime anybody dare question anything about Jeff Simmons.
Well,
and that's not the way Kevin Byard or Wesley Woodyard or a lot of the best leaders that have been telling
you like that.
Well, just think of that way with me much.
Just glaring.
So they like you.
I'm just saying I bring as much of that into the locker room as anybody did. And Delanie Walker stood up to it instead of, getting sour about it.
And that might be a generational thing, which we'll find out, because this seems to be a particularly active and engaged and
lighthearted.
Lighthearted maybe. We'll see how they respond when they're here and something goes wrong and they have to answer questions about it. But it does seem to be a particularly engaging group of rookies. But Joe, just to your point about Jeff leading in that room, he wasn't able to get the best out of Tier Tart. Partly on Jeff. It's a Vrabel thing, it's a Terrell Williams thing. But it's also
Autry was working on Tart. I don't know if Simmons was working on Tart, or I got the impression that Simmons was done with Tart.
That's how it felt after London.
Well, I got the impression that it was hard to not be done with Tart at a certain point with a lot of people here, though. You know what I mean? Like, you have to have a willing partner. So Tavondre Sweat is still about him more than anything.
Sure, sure.
But I think that Jeff Simmons does model what you want to be. And I don't know, I disagree with you guys a little bit on him as a leader. I understand he has gotten – there have been times after some losses where it's kind of like you'd like to see a little bit more. Yeah, that's on us. That's on me. I get that. But I think even going back to when he wasn't a leader on the team, the intensity on the field and how he interacted with his teammates, I think he's built for that.
Yeah, I mean, he scores high on some of the things you want. He doesn't score high on all of the things.
But like with Tart, yeah, he may have been.
That's the sample size that we have right now, and we'll see how it plays out. There's a lot of other picks. Obviously, day three is where the bulk of the Titans draft was. They go Cedric Gray, the linebacker out of North Carolina, in the fourth round. They had a huge gap between 38 and 106. We talked about the viability or lack thereof in the Titans' estimation of a trade. But they do get an off-ball linebacker that answers, theoretically, the green dot question, Joe.
Yeah, and of course, Rand Carthon mentioned Dr. Jack, and he's got to earn it. But I think he's going to start. I think he's going to start from day one. He's going to start from day one.
The dismissiveness of the Dr. Jack.
Dr. Jack shouldn't be on the roster. Dr. Jack shouldn't be in the league.
Well, and this is down over there. But this is a move. Yeah, well, that was a bit extreme. This is a move that will push those guys further and further off the roster. Dr. Jack should be Luke Gifford. This will push them further and further down the roster, one would imagine. And maybe they make it through camp, maybe they don't. We'll find out. But in theory, this is going to be somebody who's capable of helping Kenneth Murray. It is interesting, though, to read the analysis, at least from your guy, Dane Brugler, at The Athletic, by the way, theathletic.com, Robbie and Rex Road, 6 to 9 a.m. on 102.5 The Game. You can listen to the Paul Kaharsky podcast. You're already listening to the Paul Kaharsky podcast with the promo code of Zen Sports.
TN Paul.
We are hanging out here on a joint 615 Sessions podcast /PK Pod. All of it. Well, this is the lamest rotation of my life, let me tell you. I promise you that. But with Cedric Gray, Kenneth Murray, not a read and react guy, not somebody capable of wearing the green dot. He got demoted in Los Angeles, PK. This is not somebody, Cedric Gray, this is a particularly weak off-ball linebacker class. Key in diagnosing does not seem to be a strength based on the analysis and based on the tape study of people at least smarter than me.
Yes, smarter than all three of us. The first line in a lot of this stuff is not instinctive. And that's a concern, because when you saw Kenneth Murray, you said, well, he'll be all right if you just let him go.
He needs
if
to
he's
have
paired
a real
with somebody
green dot guy,
who's like Aziz Al-Shaair, somebody that's really smart and sees everything and anticipates stuff.
But who didn't have a huge pedigree as a college player coming in as a prospect.
No, but you knew what he was when he arrived here, and they knew what he was when he wanted to keep him. So I like Cedric Gray, but his number one bullet point isn't what you'd like his number one bullet point to be. Now it gets easier for him, like you said earlier, playing behind Simmons and Sweat, so it should be clean. But they also, they've made a big deal out of Frank Bush developing guys. They've talked about that. If you look through Frank Bush's history, it's hard to find somebody that Frank Bush developed.
And a big part of that history has been here.
Yeah. So, a lot of, I'll say, pressure on that. Frank Bush needs to have Cedric Gray ready. He is significantly a better athlete or should be, and has a better pedigree than Otis Reese, than Jack Gibbons, than James Williams, who we're going to talk about a little bit at the end here, than anybody else that's on the roster. If he's not the green dot guy on opening day, they've got a problem.
They're going to rely a lot on this defensive youth, and they've supplemented that with blue chip players like Jeff, like Legarius Sneed. Harold's probably not a blue chip player. You go through a couple of different edge guys before you get to Harold Landry's name just league-wide. But still, Joe, you asked about the fortification, though, of the secondary, which is where we'll go next, because they did add Jarvis Brownlee, the corner out of Louisville. He said he likes outside. He said he loves nickel in particular. This does push Trey Avery further down the depth chart. It does give them additional options should something happen, God forbid, to Roger McCreary, to Chidobe Awuzie, who's had injuries in his past, and then, of course, Legarius Sneed, who's the big-ticket item.
Right. First of all, John Glennon would be happy that Rand Carthon actually brought up Trey Avery, so John didn't have to ask about
it. John didn't get any mention today. He didn't come here.
He was on a Zoom call.
Watched interviews.
Nailed it in on the final day of the draft.
Ostracized from the media.
We know you're watching, Johnny. We know you hear us.
Johnny's sleeping.
It's pretty late. It's pretty late on a draft night. Anyway, Joe, you asked Rand Carthon about the reshaping of the
center. Well, yeah. I mean, it's to me, that position group, it's amazing. Because I like Brownlee. I think it's depth. That he's a nickel. He's 5'10", 194. I think that's what he has to be in the NFL. I think he's an inside guy, but you watch him play. Obviously, we all know Legarius Sneed. Roger McCreary is a really nice guy. But, I mean, the aggression, I think the overall theme also beyond corner, but, like, there are just guys in this class, downhill, hard-hitting, aggressive guys. But a corner in particular, you know, the press coverage you watch Brownlee play in college, it strikes me as certainly Denard Wilson influenced, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what he wants his defense to be. And just the transformation of that corner group, I can't recall with the Tennessee Titans, you know, in 8 years of being around here, one position group transforming that dramatically from 1 year to the next. I mean, it was a bad situation. Maybe the offensive line in John Robinson's first year, because he got Conklin and Ben Jones, and then like Lawan came to life, and that, you know, totally different. But and they were terrible the year before.
Sure,
but this corner group has depth, and I think a lot of quality. It's a very good corner group, I think, in the NFL.
Well, I would say that it's as reshaped as it's been since J-Rob PK, because one of the first things that I remember John doing when he got hired is clearing out the secondary, because they were dealing with guys like Parrish Cox, Valentino Blake. They got Logan Ryan. They got Malcolm Butler. I know that was a multi-year process, right. And this has been more immediate. So maybe
drafted Adoree Jackson.
To your point, and that became the whole MMCMB group. They got Vaccaro for the cheap after Cyprian tore the ACL that year. So it was kind of but still, in one fell swoop, I don't know that they've ever shifted as much in the secondary.
No, and when you're shifting from a group, you mentioned Valentino Blake, who arrived as Antoine Blake. Mm-hmm. When you've got a corner who changes his name, that's because the early version of the guy can't cover. Everybody knows it. He wants somebody to think, oh, that's the we played against a Blake there. He wasn't very good. This must be a new Blake.
I'm now Valentino Rising.
I was going to say, after your little lonely picture I took today, we should call you Valentino Garza.
He does have his friends. Yeah. We're his friends. Look at him.
Listen,
smiling.
He was down sitting alone because this guy was endorsing maniacs who were talking about the recipes of food at the 1994 Olympics. It's nonstop talk. I had to get out of there.
You're calling Teresa sanity. Walker a maniac.
Teresa
names.
Walker was insane.
No.
Unhinged, unbearable. He brought
you
up the name.
More than
it was insane.
You talk
I talked a little
anyone.
Bit about football, but then I allowed for times of calm. There were no times of calm today. It was 5 hours of nonstop talk. She read us a story, word for word, about AP reporters drinking ouzo. Nobody asked for it. Nobody deserved it. It was unbearable.
What's
Joe
Uzo?
Sat there and took it.
What's Uzo?
It's a licorice flavored. You were insane.
You didn't think it was
yes,
interesting.
Yes, I did.
Joe facilitates this whole thing. Also, she does this thing on Twitter where she reads things that are 20 minutes old that everybody knows. Yes, we know that they drafted that player. It happened 20 minutes ago. Shut up.
I'm sure that's good microphone audio when we're banging on the table, all three of us.
Joe endorses all of it.
She's still here. We need to bring her in.
All of it. She's not here. She left a long time ago. She writes for AP. It's three paragraphs.
Longtime guest co-host of the 615 Sessions podcast, Teresa Walker, will address these issues with her in a future episode. To keep it moving.
She gave herself a crown after she called herself the queen.
I also have a crown, but that's neither here nor there. Jaquan Jackson is the only other offensive player that they drafted in this class, PK. To go along with the tackle, J.C. Latham. He is very undersized. He's 5'9", 188. He has return ability, which is a plus. But looking at him in particular, he seems almost exclusively to be a future slot option, which we've asked Brian Callahan before. And we know that there is going to be competition there in particular. Anthony Robinson, the assistant general manager, spoke to us at the end of the night, at the end of the draft with Rand Carthon just a few minutes ago, and said they think that this is a player that has versatility outside and in. But as you look at the players in that Titans wide receiver core, this is definitely somebody who has a specific fit.
I think it hurts Kyle Phillips.
Sure.
Sure.
Hell yes.
May
it
hurt
should.
Treylon Burks, who a lot of people have envisioned in the slot, but the coach hasn't really allowed for that possibility yet. Also, different kind of player if you want quick.
Short
sudden,
space quickness.
Short space. Well, you got
he's an actual slot guy.
You got short space slowness from Treylon Burks, who needs 7 yards to gather speed. I'm very down on Treylon Burks right now, and I think a lot of people are with me.
We are in this club together.
So, certainly, first in line is as a returner, and Rand Carthon just told us he sees him as a dual threat returner, and the return game is revamped now on the kickoff. So. Excited to see what he's there. I would think he's a candidate to be the slot guy on opening day, where there's going to be a big big competition. And also, you know, you don't have to have a designated slot guy that's automatically the slot guy.
But drafting him, doesn't drafting him say that they want one?
Yeah, I would think so.
But this organization has been trying to find a designated slot guy for years.
It's also a sixth round.
They had one with Humphreys, and that was effective when he was healthy, right? And different offense, everything.
He just kept getting blown up. But the point,
it's the third try, and so, you know, you had Humphreys, then you didn't have one for a while, and then you got Phillips.
In practice, he was
unavailable for most of the time.
Killing people in practice for years.
Yeah, so did Christian Fulton, right? But I don't want to hear about practice stuff. Training camp, Treylon Burks was a real thing.
He's a number one Christian Fulton apologist. He just said something negative about him. That's remarkable.
How about that? Growth and development. But I think you posed an interesting question, so now let's make content out of it, about the wide receiver core on whatever opening we get.
Yeah, they're an 11 personnel. Who's the third guy? We know who the two outside guys are. If they're an 11 person, I get a slot. Who's in the slot?
So for the audience live streaming on the Paul Kaharsky podcast and on the 615 Sessions podcast, if you had three day one wide receivers and 11 personnel, who would they be? You have Calvin Ridley. You have DeAndre Hopkins. Who would be your third, PK?
I'm going to go with Jackson out of the gate. I mean, he's fresh.
Out of the gate.
He's new. He's chosen in part by the head coach who has talked about wanting a specific slot. I'm not counting on Burks or Phillips to be healthy or available or beloved by a coach and a GM that didn't draft them. And I think both of those guys are gravy. So, you know, right now it's a three-sided coin flip, really, maybe four. But I'm going to go with the draft.
Yeah, I guess I would go Burks, but very reluctantly. I mean, the Tennessean guys.
Over your boy?
Oh, and
over wide receiver one?
Well, you know, he's always there.
Over the pride of Bloomington, Indiana? What the hell is wrong with you? This guy, the biggest Nick Westbrook Aquino apologist in the world, now won't even put him in the starting lineup. How times have changed.
Never mind whether he's in the starting lineup or not. Do you have him as wide receiver one or two?
Well, he is a nice guy to have on the roster, that NWI. And it could be him.
The roster, he winds up on the field.
I think he ends up winding up on the field because that's exactly the point. People, you know, Gentry Estes of the Tennessean was like, what's wrong with Treylon Burks? And I said, well, he's got to make it through training camp. And Joe Cenario is at the start of the season.
Right.
The availability of this player is the reason that I'm so down on him. I think as a human, you want to see him succeed. You don't want the guy to fail and wash out because his body continues to fail him. But I don't trust him. I'm at a point where I don't want to have to factor Treylon Burks in to my analysis, really, because even when he's out there, Joe, there are moments where he flashes. The Green Bay game a couple of years ago, he had a big game for them this year against the Chargers.
He had one play.
He had
it was a big play.
But it's one play again. So the fact that I can do it on one hand, the amount of difference-making plays that Treylon Burks has made in 2 years coming off a year where he has 222 yards receiving on 16 damn receptions, I don't want to have to think about him anymore. The person who continues to make me think about him is NWI, which is why I would go there.
Yeah, it could be. And look, I think PK could be right, though. Again, it's like how valuable do they see the actual, you know, according to like central casting slot receiver who does slot receiver things? I don't know. I mean, we're going to find out. But if so, I think they drafted him. And I think Kyle Phillips is going to have to fight hard to, you know, to stay in front of him. So I think it could be him. But yeah, Burks. Yes, he's had injuries and he's had issues, but also he's been on the field enough with no impact at all that I think that's why you just have to almost consider him gravy.
Kyle Phillips killed himself. He could be an established return man in the NFL and not up.
Right, he's dynamic.
Not up for it.
Got to catch it.
Yeah.
Dynamic.
He's just not up to the task.
The reason that I would have some initial reticence, though, about the idea of Jackson starting right away is because I'm thinking about a previous coaching staff that took forever to get rookies on the field unless absolutely necessary. We don't have any idea whether Brian Callahan is going to take that same approach, but Mike Vrabel seemed to have a prove it. And when we feel like you've earned it sufficiently, whether it be Chig or other guys who have had to really grind it out before they were probably
in there right away. Tyjae Spears in there right away.
And Mike brought him up as one of the primary playmakers at the start of the year, which probably could have told us something about last year.
Exceptions, though, not the rule. And contrast that to Rand Carthon talking about starters at all of these spots and charging his skill. It's unrealistic, but it's a nice idea that he referred San Francisco. Got Brock Purdy starting, pretty unusual, and several fifth rounders in their line guys. So, I mean, the Titans don't Titans have three guys who are going to be shoved out of the lineup conceivably by this draft class. Who Phillips, conceivably. Who else? I wrote about them, but they're not good players. They're players who are in there because the roster's so bad.
Well, to your point, I'd have, you know, we don't know how good any of these guys will be, but you look at this list, you may be looking at four starters and five impact guys that go through the sixth round of the draft. You know, I mean
yeah, Williams and Harrell can't be anywhere near.
I'm not counting line. Those guys. Right. I'm talking, but Jackson in the sixth round. We're talking about him possibly starting on opening day. Don't know if it's going to happen or not. But the bottom line is, that's a lot of impact.
So Latham, in six Sweat, rounds Gray, and Jackson
potential impact.
Potential impact, and Brownlee.
Brownlee's going to be on the field this season.
Yeah, he's going to be a big special teamer, and he'll be people there will get hurt. Twists
and people will get hurt.
And so to wrap this up, because we've already killed one of Paul's microphones, and he's been kind to let us use his audio setup here today.
What the heck did you do, Paul?
Well, he might have run out of gas.
That's a lot of press conferences today. We'll wrap up with the two seventh-round picks. James Williams, who's going to be a linebacker in Miami. Another defensive player, Jalen Harrell, out of Michigan, who they see three downs. He's going to have some opportunity to compete with guys like Rashad Weaver and a dude like even Arden Key, who I think is very the defense had a ton of needs that they had to get addressed, and at least they've given some variety to the linebacker position.
Well, if you love James Williams, he's going to be a special teamer for you early. So that's got to be the end of, you know, Chance Campbell or Luke Gifford, or certainly Garrett Wallow or JoJo Doman. You know, for inside linebacker, as thin as they are, there are four guys I just listed who, you know, offer you virtually nothing in terms of playing snaps on defense. So, you know, that's a trade out for me there. And then you try to develop him into a guy who could give you some defense or be a goal line package guy or something like that.
Yeah, and Harrell, you know, Harrell's a good player at Michigan. Michigan's interesting because it was such a loaded defense. So how much did he benefit from some of the better players who went much higher in the draft around him, you know? But, I mean, he made plays. I think at least he's a nice developmental guy. Caleb Murphy's also a guy like that, you know? And so it would have been nice to see the Titans get an impact edge in this draft. You can't address everything. You know, you're looking at Landry, Key, and Weaver.
A better version of Rashad Weaver, a more well-rounded version.
Was
of Rashad
a very That's different, a question I would ask. Much less, I think, physical player, but maybe a little bit better juice as a passer.
Well, you give Weaver credit for being a physical player, and he can't set the edge.
That kind of negates the physicality element to me, though, Joe. Because
he makes mental mistakes. Right. Yes.
So there's a consistent theme, though, with him, and he's had a huge sample size.
Plenty of opportunity. Plenty of rotational players.
So you're trying to work those guys ideally out of the rotation based on the production today. Quickly, since we have a Detroit, you're not a Detroit native, are you?
I mean, I'm a Michigan native.
We got a lot of pushback on the idea that Detroit did a better draft job than Nashville from people on Twitter. They did break the attendance record.
It's not about attendance. That was about attendance, but now
it's not about attendance.
The bar will change because they got beat at attendance.
All right, well, wait before you tear it down. Let him talk up what a good job, because they did a great job.
Oh, I was going to support Detroit.
Well, yeah. But you were going to go after Nashville first. I know you.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Detroit. And Lex, let me bring John Glennon back into this.
No, why?
Johnny.
He ignorantly rips Detroit. And I'm like, you haven't been to Detroit in years. Detroit is a great city.
Shut up.
Detroit is a great city, and Detroit did a great job of the draft. I like what they did. I don't think that it wasn't there, but it's hard to replicate what we do here in this city. We just have a setup that's perfect for that. So, in my opinion, you know, they didn't have a better draft than Nashville, but if attendance, that does something, and so good for them.
We don't know the atmosphere. People are telling me the atmosphere didn't match Nashville. How do you know? Were you there? You were here and you loved it. But this thing, it's a Civil War.
You were here and you loved it.
It's a Civil War all over again. It can't possibly have been better somewhere else than here.
Well, it's a little different dynamic than the Civil War. You know, we don't have to relitigate American history. But I do think,
as he said,
the atmosphere looked electric. Though I will say, the difference being when Detroit made a pick, afterwards, everybody left. When the Titans made a pick, that dynamic is real.
Well, how late was Detroit's pick?
It was late.
It was late.
Where was the Titans?
19.
Pretty early. Middle of the round. Middle of the round. So
it looked pretty damn good.
How about we respect both cities?
And part of it was that Detroit had a width that Nashville doesn't. So Broadway, to me, visually, very impressive. But you look at Detroit, and it's seven times as wide, in some ways, more visually impressive. That's okay. I'm not saying Nashville's bad. I'm saying Detroit's good. That's okay.
We're just saying not as many people need to cope on social media about it. This has been a joint Paul Kaharsky podcast / 615 sessions. What did you do? You want to start a podcast right now? We'll give you the audio.
No, but I just want to say that I had one cookie today. One effing cookie. I had one cookie.
Nobody believes that.
I mean, I had about 20 wings and a lot of brisket and potatoes. But I had one cookie.
Do you have a stain?
And Buck Fat shamed me.
Where's the stain? There's a little bit of grease.
Teresa let me use the...
He's absconded right there with the evidence. But many thanks to the boys, even though this is technically your podcast. Promo code what on Zen Sports?
TN Paul.
And do you have anything else to plug on your podcast?
I say don't block the box, but be sure to lock the lock.
I don't have anything cool like that.
Don't undress in front of Paul Kaharsky in a locker room.
Does that happen with you?
You didn't remember when he filmed people naked last year?
No, people don't remember.
What's wrong with you, Buck?
You didn't make it sticky.
This was a great joke, and it happened last year, and you blew it.
Okay, I forgot that I know what Arden Key's ass looks like. I forgot that the rest of America didn't know what Arden Key's ass looked like. Either way,
you put it on the internet.
We appreciate you guys hanging out with us. So I put a picture of Joe eating a cookie on the internet that you can also find.
That's all Buck did this weekend. Yesterday got me getting cupcakes.
It's a long, long weekend, and we're still here doing it for you. So read everything he writes at paulkaharsky.com. Read everything that he writes at theathletic.com. And I'll be on radio on Monday morning at 10 a.m. to talk about all of this, guys. Thank you guys for hanging out.
Six.
Thanks for Bert to making this work, because he's been very, very patient throughout the course of the day. I hope the rest of you have a phenomenal draft weekend, and we'll talk to you at some point in some form or fashion.
Bert, don't close the stream. Just end the stream.
Which defensive player stands to benefit most from the coaching change? Poipel Neupel. Bert, I know you're laughing as hard at that as I am. I could not.